We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning.
Hello?
We're on to Cincinnati.
You play to win the game.
It was all that Dan Marino's fault. Everyone knows that.
When it's too tough for them, it's just right for us.
The Rockpile Report, AFC East Roundup, hosted by Bills season ticket holder Drew Gear, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the AFC's Roundup Podcast. I'm your host, Bill season ticket holder Drew Gear. That's my producer, Chris Krueger. And we're here talking about Week 11. Week 11 in the AFC East. And there were some significant shifts. It almost hurts me to talk about it. Because we run down the standings from the top. New England, for the first time in this show's history, occupies the first place position atop the division, and I'm not going to lie, I kind of want to be sick just looking at it. 7-4. At 6-4, the Buffalo Bills are behind them, and having lost the division lead, lost a game to the Colts, lost their balls, and most fans are wishing Josh Allen and Sean McDermott would just pull a Harry and Lloyd, get on a scooter, and drive their no-showing asses to Aspen. Get away from here. And yet, that's not where we live. Miami, they beat the Jets the way everybody in our division seems to. And then that brings us to the Jets. The Jets lost again, cementing themselves as the worst team in the division with Joe Flacco at the helm for a second consecutive season. Joe Flacco taking snaps in New Jersey. I don't even know what to do with that. I don't know what to say about it. But I know somebody who does. That's Mr. Scott Mason from Play Like a Jet. How are you, sir?
Well, I just got to stop you there. You know, Joe Flacco has now thrown 3 touchdown passes in 5 quarters, which is a huge improvement for what we've seen from Jets quarterbacks this year. And, by the way, 0 interceptions on top of it. So, you know, laugh all you want about 36-year-old Joe Flacco, but He's getting the job done. And by job, I mean getting them to the point where they would now have the number 2 overall pick.
I'm not going to lie to you. Hearing you say the 36-year-old Joe Flacco hurts my feelings because I'm 36. And here's the thing. You can't, like, as we talked about in this week's just Rock Pal Report game recap, some shit happened to me, and I feel it, like I still feel it to this day. So it's one of those things that I'm old. Like, we talked about table jumping with some people who came in from out of town to see this debacle of a football game for the Buffalo Bills this week. And one of the things I was talking about is, look, I'm so old that I don't know, like, I don't want to fall more than 6 inches because I'm pretty sure it's going to hurt for at least a full day. Here's 36-year-old Joe Flacco still going out there and subjecting himself to the rigors of a game. And he's not Tom Brady. No, he's not injecting avocado water into his veins and, I don't know, taking mud baths and then be... I'm pretty sure, like, he actually does the whole, like, the Jabba the Hutt. They freeze him in carbonite and they break him out, like, Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, watching Joe Flacco for the Jets was like... probably watching Terry Funk in the WWF at the end of the 90s as Chainsaw Charlie. It's like, dude, just hang it up. You're done.
And yet it wasn't. You would think it would go that way. And yet he went out there and looked competent, and so did the Jets offense. And I guess that's where I want to start here. You know, the New York Jets, you lose, you lose a close-ish one. You tried. You fought the good fight. And I guess that's the biggest storyline, is that for week after week after week, the Jets have been blown out of their football games. You guys get blown out by Buffalo. You know, you have a blowout to the Colts. I mean, your offense kept you guys in it on the scoreboard, but that was more a byproduct of the Colts' defense. You beat the Bengals, and that felt good, but your defense still wasn't very good. This was a game where all of a sudden you're in a real rock fight, and it's going into the fourth quarter, and you're tied. And you say, wait a minute, our players are making plays. Guys are flashing. The departure from watching, this is what I want to know from you first, right off the top. Watching a veteran quarterback run this offense and the way that the playmakers on this offense responded, is this what this offense was supposed to be? And does it make you lament just a little bit the idea that it's been turned over to nothing but rookies so far?
I do think to some degree it's what it was supposed to be, but I mean, if we're being real about this, the main value that Joe Flacco brought was, and this is something that Robert Saleh said when he talked about his decision to start Flacco, the Dolphins blitz, which was just brutal, it killed the Jets all day. Flacco was going to be able to handle that much better than Mike White, and obviously Zach Wilson wasn't ready to play anyway physically. But I could see a situation where Mike White would have turned the ball over 5 or 6 times. Flacco turned it over once on a fumble. He got absolutely crushed on a blindside sack. George Fant forgot to block anybody on that particular play. But other than that, he kind of hung in there, knew what to do, get rid of the ball when he needed to get rid of the ball. But the main reason why the Jets offense, I'm not going to say it was great, but it was better, is because they got the ball in the hands of Elijah Moore. It's really that simple. Michael Carter played well, too, when he was in the game, predominantly running the ball. He didn't do much of anything catching the ball as a receiver, and then he got hurt later on. But Elijah Moore, the one play that made all the highlight reels, obviously, was the play where Flacco goes back, and Elijah Moore has Byron Jones on him, and he just jukes Byron Jones out of his shoes. Jones basically trips over his own 2 feet and falls. And as that's happening, Flacco gets rid of the ball right into Elijah Moore's hands, and he takes the rest of the way. It ends up being a 62-yard touchdown. But this is the guy that, when you watch the Ole Miss tape, you saw. This is the guy that, when you talk to the beat reporters that were at camp all offseason, and, you know, Drew, I was on your show talking about this repeatedly, that I had heard from beat reporter after beat reporter, and particularly Chris Nimbley, who would come on with me daily for reports, that Elijah Moore was just destroying everybody at training camp, that he was having the type of camp that you just typically didn't see from a Jets offensive player, let alone a rookie. And that's what you've been seeing the last few weeks, and this week he really exploded. But remember, 5 touchdowns in the last 4 weeks. He had the big 62-yarder this week, 140 yards, I believe, on 8 catches, and then another carry out of the backfield for 15 yards. And that was the big difference, because half of Joe Flacco's passing yards were to Elijah Moore. Now, Jamison Crowder had a short touchdown grab as well. And like I said, the main value was Flacco was composed and didn't end up getting himself killed by that Dolphins pass rush. But at the same time, really it was just getting the ball in the hands of Elijah Moore. And one thing that he did well last year when he was here, Joe Flacco, is that he was able to get the ball into the hands of Denzel Mims, who we all were very happy about coming into this year, and then obviously it's been derailed for a variety of reasons. But I think what Jets fans should be happy about and I know this sounds weird because with Jets fans, it's like, oh, man, how many more times do we have to say this? But Michael Carter has looked really good the last few weeks. Elijah Vera Tucker is playing like a Pro Bowler. Elijah Moore has been absolutely unstoppable the last couple of weeks, especially this past game against the Dolphins. So you're seeing these young players that could be cornerstones of the offense going forward. If Zach Wilson comes back and starts to show you more of what you saw from him against Tennessee and more of what we saw from him at BYU and what we expected out of him as the number two overall pick, then this team may be bad right now, but that's a lot of reason for optimism going forward, is you would have a receiver, a running back, a lineman, and potentially a quarterback who could all be building blocks for the long term. And look, I hate to say this, but you got to start somewhere. And the Jets have been a mess for a really long time. Joe Douglas was brought in here to clean it up. And at least over the last couple of weeks, as you said, Drew, we've started to see what this offense was supposed to be, dribs and drabs of it. And so now the final piece is, can Zach Wilson come back and kind of complete that circle? But right now, you got to be thrilled about what you've seen out of Elijah Vera Tucker. You got to be thrilled about what you've seen out of Elijah Moore. You got to be thrilled about what you've seen out of Michael Carter, and that's very encouraging.
No, for sure. And I guess that's where this game comes down to, is you lost the football game, and yet at the same time, it's not one you thought you were going to win going in. You have to be pleasantly surprised with the composure of the team, and you're starting to see some players take steps forward. And I think that's the important part. And also, I think one of the biggest areas that this team has grown over the last few weeks has been the coaching staff. I mean, say what you want about the lack of talent here or at a specific position, the state of the cornerback group, injuries, whatever have you. This was a coaching staff that's full of rookies. And we talk about all the time how the Jets' dynamic was that they shot down Matt Rhule. Or at least they lost Matt Rhule as a candidate because they refused to let him pick his own group. So the next time around when they said, okay, we have another young guy who wants to pick his own group, we'll let him do it. He picked all rookies to ride or die with him. And that has kind of over the last few weeks presented its own issues. And we've talked about it. We've made fun of your offensive coordinator. We've talked about the defense kind of underwhelming. We've talked about Rex Ryan playing tough guy with Robert Saleh. Like, we've talked about all these things. But you see in a game like that, where this seems like a coach who finally understands, okay, I know how to get us at least to the third quarter. I'm learning what it is to compete for four full quarters, to coach a team, to call a game, to make in-game pivots and decisions. How important do you think that is long-term for the Jets? And, I mean, do you see the same growth that I think I'm seeing from your coaching staff?
Honestly, more so with LaFleur than with Saleh and Ulbrich. With Saleh and Ulbrich on the defensive side of the ball, but I guess really more Ulbrich because he is running that defense, what you've seen is teams have figured out what to do against the Jets. You can beat them with screens and draws, as the Bills did, as the Dolphins just did, as we saw the Patriots do, and the Colts, and teams have figured that out. And then what they do is they use that to set up down the field stuff, which we didn't see as much from the Dolphins, but we saw it enough. The Dolphins are a team that has an offense that has been particularly bad this year. They scored, I think it was 7 or 8 points above their season average against the Jets. So even though 24 points on paper doesn't look like that bad of a showing, for the Dolphins, it's not a great showing. And again, you said they decided to ride or die with rookies, and that is true in a lot of spots. They've had injuries, but that's part of the game. It's just tough, though, because for as much as the offense is starting to show signs of life, the defense has really regressed. So it kind of comes down to, like, adjustments and things like that. And Jeff Ulbrich got a lot of people riled up by saying there weren't going to be wholesale defensive changes. We're going to tweak things as we go with guys that we get that are new or different or coming back from injury. And I get that, but he's really got to get better at messaging, because when you're consistently letting up that many yards, or the previous few weeks, that many points, fans don't want to hear, oh, we're not going to make any real wholesale changes. You got to be better about, yeah, we're going to make major changes where they need to be made. We're going to do what we have to do to get back on track, whatever it is, however it is you want to phrase it. Offensively, yeah. I mean, look, the main thing there has been, there's an interesting story. John Benton, the offensive line coach, said that in the first few games, Elijah Vera Tucker, they chart guys when they miss assignments, right? So he said the first few weeks, there were quite a few of them. The last 4 weeks going into that Dolphins game, he'd missed zero assignments. And this comes on the heels of that story about when they were in London and Elijah Vera Tucker, when they got back, was waiting by John Benton's office when Benton got there first thing in the morning. And he just looked at him and said, Coach, I played poorly against the Falcons. That's not going to happen again. And it hasn't. He's been phenomenal. He's been everything you would have wanted when they traded up for him in the first round. Michael Carter has really made strides as a dual threat. I'm hoping that the injury will be bad, although the early signs are not great as we record this. So we'll see. Elijah Moore, the tape showed he was open a lot, but the quarterbacks just either weren't seeing him or weren't pulling the trigger on throwing the ball to him. Well, that's changed, and now all of a sudden he's producing like the guy that we were expecting him to be. And so the pieces are starting to fall into place. And Mike LaFleur's been up in the box. We've talked about this. I think that might be a part of it too. The Jets offense, again, it's not a good offense. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Jets offense is playing great. But there's a lot of signs of life here that you didn't see earlier. And once Zach Wilson comes back, which we'll see, but looks like there's at least a decent chance it would be Sunday against Houston, in Houston, then we'll see what this offense looks like with all those pieces together. But with Salah, it's still TBD to me because there's still some questionable stuff that has gone on. I mean, for example, in the game, he had Matt Amendola, the kicker, who, if we're being real, is not all that good. He had him try a 55-yard kick towards the end of the first half. Amendola shanked it, and then the Jets got a lucky break because the Dolphins got a short field, went right down, and were going to score, but then their kicker missed the chip shot field goal. So really what this comes down to is Sal is still kind of learning how to make in-game decisions because that's not something he really had to do, you know, from a head coaching standpoint in San Francisco. Olbrich has had his problems the last few weeks. I guess we'll see how he adjusts. And yes, of course, a big part of that has to do with inexperience. But still, if you're somebody who made your bones as a defensive whiz in Salah and then Olbrich, you would think they would find ways to at least have that defense be reasonably competitive on a weekly basis. So there's still question marks. Like I said, I think LaFleur has done much more to help himself than Salah or Olbrich. Salah's obviously not going anywhere regardless. Olbrich's probably not going anywhere, but as I said to you guys last week, 24 points against the Dolphins is not the end of the world, but if we see more of these 45, 50-point blowouts, then he could be in more trouble than he would have anticipated in year one.
No, for sure. I just... This game seemed like a departure from what had been happening to the Jets recently, even just as recently as a week ago against the Bills. So it's good to see that against a division rival that, I mean, to hear other people talk about it and Dolphins fans talk about it, the Jets-Dolphins rivalry is pretty heated. You know, it's almost kind of what the Bills-Dolphins rivalry was for a while. That you, because the series seems evenly split. You guys have done enough to at least make a game out of this one. And hopefully this is a building block towards something better for you long term. Hopefully some of these young guys Elijah Moore got to experience what it's like to go, hey, my quarterback's in trouble. I'm going to come back and help make a play. So I'm just picturing this when Zach comes back and he gets in trouble, Elijah Moore now knows, hey, I can't just keep going and running my route and hoping that the quarterback's going to make me look good. I have to help him look good. I have to help him do his job. And in that way, the two of them can maybe grow together. There's a lot to like here. There's also a lot not to like about today on the calendar, specifically for all of our Jets fans listening to this podcast, because I don't know if you know this, maybe you do. I'm a petty son of a bitch, so of course I have it marked down. Today is the anniversary. I believe it's the 9th anniversary of the butt fumble.
Uh-huh.
Is that a play that you guys have just kind of stricken from the record?
Yeah, I remember it well.
Scott?
Yeah, I remember it well, actually. I recall I had tickets that game, and my brother and I were supposed to go. And we were going back and forth about it because the Jets were terrible that year. And he's like, do you really want to go to this? And he's like, let's sell our tickets. So we sold them. And then I remember my brother, I forget what I ended up doing, but my brother texted me. He's like, I'm smoking weed, eating Boston Market on the couch right now. I'm glad we didn't go to this game. And then we were joking about the butt fumble later. Look, I'll say this much. I feel bad for Brandon Moore because it wasn't his fault, obviously. Sanchez was not paying attention to where he was going. And Brandon Moore is a 300-pound man. Safe to say he's got a pretty big backside. If you're running into him, then you really weren't. It's like the extreme version of, you ever see these people? They're walking and they're texting on their cell phone and like they almost get hit by a car or they almost walk into a tree or whatever. It's like the very extreme version of that. Instead of almost walking into a tree, you walked into a 300-pound man's butt.
So next week, you guys are 2.5-point underdogs to the Houston Texans, who just somehow inexplicably beat the Tennessee Titans. I'm just looking at this wondering.
With your boy Tyrod.
Do you agree or disagree with the fact that you're only down by 2.5?
No, I think it's fair because I think the Jets and the Texans at this point are pretty much on par. They both have 2 wins. They've both had their moments here and there of competitiveness, but overall been one of the worst teams in the league. And so they always say you give the home team 3 points for being at home. So if this was at MetLife Stadium, it would probably be just about reverse. So I think 2.5 points is fine. It makes sense because, like I said, they're right around even. And when that's the case, you give the home team a couple of points. And so 2.5 seems pretty reasonable to me. And to be quite honest with you, I don't see how anybody could argue because other than maybe the Lions, and even the Lions have been, actually the funny thing is the Lions have no wins, but they've been crazy competitive in a lot more games than people realize. They almost beat the Browns. There's a bunch of games where they came super close. So even with the Lions, it wouldn't be any kind of safe bet that they would cover a spread. But the Jets haven't earned any benefit of the doubt in terms of point spreads. So 2.5 points on the road against Houston makes a lot of sense to me.
Fantastic stuff as always, Scott. Where can people find you on social, and what do you have coming up over in the Play Like a Jet Network with this week?
Well, it is Thanksgiving week, fellas. So first of all, happy Thanksgiving. And second of all, we're going to have a lot of stuff this week, even with the Thanksgiving holiday. The beat rolls on, No Rest for the Wicked, still a brand new show every single day. We're going to be having the Thunder from Down Under, Luke Grant. He'll be doing some film. We'll talk keys to the game later in the week. The Very Big Deal, Chris Nimbley, he'll do the pregame show with me on Sunday morning where we do the over-unders, the last-minute news, all the game props, all that stuff. He'll be joining the show for a midweek news report, which I'm hoping will include a nod to whoever the quarterback's going to be. I'm hoping it's going to be Zach Wilson, so it'll give us something to watch for, but we'll see. And then this week, I'm going to try and start doing this more regularly because as much as I hate admitting it, this is kind of where Jets fans are at typically at this point in the season most years, and this year is no exception in recent history. Jets fans are really starting to gear up for the draft. It's November. Wish it wasn't that way, but it is. So my friend Walter Cherepinski of WalterFootball.com, the OG of online year-round draft content, is going to join me this week, and we're going to go through his mock draft that he updates. He updates it every single week throughout the year with his picks for the Jets, and he'll explain why he has certain guys slotted there. We'll talk about certain other players that might make sense for them. So we're going to start trying to do some draft content. We'll kick that off this week. So all of that is available when you download the podcast. Again, brand new show 7 days a week. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. follow online, Play Like a Jet 1. We've got the YouTube channel. Just search for Play Like a Jet. We've got our store with all the merch at teepublic.com, teepublic.com. We've got playlikeajet.com. So all of that. Gentlemen, as always, like I said, appreciate it. Love talking to you guys.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
And celebrating their second win in as many weeks, we have Elf Arteaga from 3 Yards Per Carry here to talk to us about the Miami Dolphins just kind of getting in on the fun of beating up on the New York Jets in 2021. Elf, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. And it's 3 in 3 weeks.
3 in 3 weeks. Look at this. See, I told you off air before we even started recording. I had a moment where I saw you guys as the Cleveland Indians in Major League. And this is just it, because you know what Lou Brown said. He goes, we won today. If we win tomorrow, that's two. And if we win a third one, that is what we call a winning streak. And the Dolphins have hit their first winning streak of the 2021 season. It has to. Has this done it? Remember, we started one of the earliest dynamics among the Miami fan base was that you guys, Dolphins Twitter was on fire. Everyone was flailing into the abyss. Now the team has strung together some wins. I mean, not the most. I mean, the most impressive of them has already passed you, and you beat the Jets. I mean, I think everyone expected you to do that, but you still won the game. Nobody got disappointed, and there were some notable performances within that. Everyone has to be pretty happy about that, right?
They should, but you know, you wouldn't believe it if you listened to them. They've spent the better part of an entire day parsing a 65-yard touchdown from Tua Tagovailoa to Mac Collins, trying to dissect it. You know what? He maybe should have thrown 55 yards in the air instead of 51, and then maybe he could hit him. And never mind that he hit him and he scored from 65 yards out. Everybody wants to pick that apart, you know. And even after a win against the Jets, and I know you just said, you know, it's just the lowly Jets, but we really take those. You know, with all due respect to the New England Patriots and the Buffalo Bills, Dolphins Jets is like has been our thing for ages. I don't know if you saw the overall series going into that game.
No.
But it was 55 versus 55 versus one tie.
Wow. So, all right.
Dolphins had won 55 and the Jets had won 55 and there was one tie. So now the Dolphins have 56. So we got one up on the Jets. And it's just it's a rivalry that really goes back. It's our biggest rival. In all honesty, it's our biggest rival, so it always feels nice to beat them, especially since we've beaten them 9 out of the last 10 games that we played them. So,
it's
getting better.
They're a franchise in disarray, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. But yeah, it gets better, and now, like I said, you guys are on a winning streak. I'm looking at this Tua. Again, part of the reason I had this epiphany, like I was telling you off air, I was sitting on the toilet when it came to me and I started laughing like a madman. And my wife had to come by and be like, knock on the door. Is everything all right in there? No, nothing's okay. The Bills just lost to the Colts in embarrassing fashion. I'm laughing on the toilet. You should assume everything's wrong. Everything's wrong about the world. But what I'm laughing about is the fact that this talk of like quarterback movement and Watson and all this stuff still hasn't, it's not dead yet. Now it's just, okay, next year. This just means next year they're going to pursue other options. Or this means next year the X, Y, and Z will happen. And the only thing I can think is if Tua going 27-33 with just 6 missed passes for 273, 2 touchdowns and a pick, if that's not enough, like, I don't know whatever will be. So the only option that he has with the Dolphins, it is like Major League. He's just got to go out there and win the whole damn thing. Because if not, no one's going to appreciate or respect him. Like, you'd think that your fan base would be happier about this. But you guys can't be disappointed with his performance, right?
No. He's getting better and improving every single time he plays. And quite frankly, sometimes he looks damn near elite, and he's dragging with him an albatross of an offensive line, a running game that no matter, you know, how they looked against the Jets, and they looked okay against the Jets, Myles Gaskin and Duke Johnson, who I thought looked really, really good, by the way. They activated him off the practice squad, and Duke Johnson looked like he had a little bit extra pop, a little bit more speed into the hole. So maybe he helps the running game. But he's carrying these guys to whatever points they get. He's all they have on offense because teams know, you know, it's Gesicki and Waddle and nothing else.
And that's what makes quarterback evaluation in that type of situation so hard, because people said in 2018, they said, oh, Josh Allen's the worst thing to ever happen to the quarterback position. And you say, well, okay, but also he's got no wide receivers. He's got no running backs. He's got a suspect offensive line, which is the second cheapest in the NFL. It's just a one-man show, and he knows it. And so he's just out here jumping over people and playing cowboy football because he doesn't know what else to do. And I feel like Tua is in the same boat. He just doesn't have this, because of his size and his stature and his athletic profile, he's not trucking people to the ground and trying to run the ball 40 yards at a clip. He's just staying in the pocket and trying to make things happen. And it does make quarterback evaluation incredibly difficult, but it's these types of games that I really do think Dolphins fans out there should pay attention to, because it's like, look, here are the building blocks. I've seen it. I watched a quarterback who gave you something, a little bit of something. And then you see it and you go, okay, he accomplished that with not a whole lot in the tool bag. So if you gave him better tools, better protection, then maybe he could become, I mean, he'd have to be better than whatever the hell Matt Ryan did against the Patriots this week. He has to be better than that. Anything would be. And so in that way, I just feel like there's not a lot to complain about here. Now, I do have one question when I pour over the statistics for this game. Defensively, you won the game. It seemed like a close game, although the Jets did take that chintzy field goal late in the game. I guess the question is, when I look at the box score and I see Elijah Moore, 141 yards, a career high for the rookie, a touchdown, he catches a 62-yard pass, 11 targets, 8 catches. Joe Flacco. Now, Joe Flacco is a veteran signal caller, so obviously he understands a little bit more nuance, and maybe he understands a little bit more of what he's seeing from a secondary. What allowed Elijah Moore to go wild for that kind of an output?
Well, I think this was a case where coaches actually didn't lie, and Robert Saleh had said all week, we're going to start Joe Flacco because it's Miami. Because Miami blitzes a lot. They run a lot of tricky coverages. They switch coverages a lot, so I don't think it's a good place to place our rookie quarterback. So we're going to play a veteran quarterback that knows how to handle the blitz. Last year, when we played Joe Flacco, we shut him out 24-0, and all we did was blitz all game. We blitzed them 51% of the snaps last year. We got to shut out 24-0. This time we decided, you know what? We're going to keep this up. We're going to just go zero blitz over and over and over again. And they kept hitting us for big plays, including that 62-yard touchdown. As soon as they hit that 62-yard touchdown on an all-out blitz, it was a zero blitz right across the board. You could see how Brian Flores said, you know what? We're going to make them earn every single yard that they get from here on out. And we're just going to play a little softer coverage. We're going to send four. We're going to send five and make them beat us. And they did it. And they dominated the fourth quarter. And that's how they took over the game. But I thought Joe Flacco was absolutely magnificent in beating our blitz, because he kept finding answers where there really weren't any. And he didn't make any mistakes except that one time where he got hit and he fumbled at our 15-yard line. But other than that, he played as good as I've seen Joe Flacco play in ages.
That's the interesting thing about this game, is when you look at it on its face, you say, okay, obviously Miami beat New York. It was a scratch game going into that fourth quarter. They were playing you guys tough. And that's, Chris, you can see the difference that a seasoned quarterback gives you, in not just in certain moments, but just in general, over what happens to a team that has primarily, like the Jets, started three rookie quarterbacks. You know, we just got done talking to Scott Mason about how it feels to be on that side of the fence. And all of a sudden, it's like a breath of fresh air when this guy who comes in, you go, oh, wait a minute. This guy sucks by NFL standards, but he's tenured and he's competent. And all of a sudden, the Jets offense looks the way at least a mediocre offense in the NFL should look. That's just experience. And the fact that the Jets decided to go rookies at offensive coordinator, rookies at defensive coordinator, rookies at quarterback, all down the depth chart, you can tell it's kind of been to their detriment. And some of these younger skill players of theirs are starting to develop because of the time that they, or at least they did better with a veteran talent. What I like is that Jalen Waddle and Tua don't have that same kind of drag. They're developing chemistry together already. Waddle had another good game. Another good game where most of his targets were caught. He got 60-something yards, a number of first downs. He made some big catches for you guys. He's pretty much... I know people love Mike Gesicki, and I know a lot of the talk has gravitated now towards whether or not he gets extended, what happens to him, whether or not he... Jalen Waddle looks like he might be, even for his diminutive size, the future of that wide receiver position. Is that crazy of me to say, or do you think that maybe that carries some gravitas?
Yeah, I believe so. And he's headed for a pretty decent season. If I told you you drafted a rookie, no matter where, to play wide receiver for you, and he caught 100 balls for 1,100 yards and about 10 touchdowns, would you be happy? I would. And that's pretty much where Jalen Waddle is headed. It's interesting that you say that about Mike Gesicki, because it seems like we're headed toward a situation where they might just tag him and just kick the can down the road an extra year, because I don't know if you saw the Dallas Goedert contract, but
yeah.
All these contract numbers that are coming out for tight ends are fine with me. Just give Mike Gesicki that money. It's all that tight end money is coming right in line with what we want to pay. Well, I would be comfortable in paying, but they seem to keep holding off on it. Interesting enough, he had a press conference today, and he said that they have to pay Durham Smythe. That before they pay him, pay Durham Smythe, which is our backup tight end, our blocking tight end, who's been pretty good this year. And he's been good since he's gotten here. But that's interesting that Mike Gesicki is waiting for his big payday, and he's talking about another tight end on the team getting a payday. So,
and maybe that's, and maybe some of that's like, hey, listen, I want to show you that I'm being a team guy, right? And maybe that's part of the message here, is that, look, I'm here, I'm in Miami, I want to be a part of this, I want to get paid. But also, you could pay other people. We could keep this group together, because quietly, you guys, I mean, obviously the Patriots went out in free agency and blew the doors off everybody. What, they have two tight ends that are making 12.5 a year, and Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. And then when you look at what they have behind that, even their depth tight ends, it's like, okay, you guys have a lot of money invested in this position. No one else in the division spent that. I feel like it's one of those things where they spent money because they find value in it and not a lot of other teams do. And so in that way, it's kind of like he's willing to say, look, I get it that most franchises don't want to throw around the kind of cash that Philly or the Patriots or some of these other teams are currently doing. But I'm open to the fact that this should be, you know, get it done. But I'm also trying to send the message that I'm a team first guy. Maybe if they approached him with a reasonable deal, it gets done. I mean, his stat line in this game, it continues to be one of those things. You know, Mac Hollins catches the big pass, and he's a converted tight end. Like, he used to be a tight end. Gesicki comes in 6 of 5, 50 yards. Again, it's not star numbers, but they're important numbers in this game and over the course of a given season.
It also bears repeating that he had a 35-yard catch called back for what, and they called him for pass interference. And if you watch the play, he just did what any other receiver would do, running a deep slant, which is just get your hand out just a little bit to create that little space to catch the ball. That's all he did. They called him for it, and they called that back. So if you could add 1 and 36 yards to those totals, and it makes those totals a lot better.
No, for sure. So, and then before we go, here's what's funny. Jalen Phillips might have had his most complete game as a pro, and yet I see people on Dolphins Twitter who are frustrated about it. So let's talk about this for a second. Jalen Phillips, He's been a little up and down through the early goings of the season. I think when you look at the people who were drafted at the defensive end position, kind of the linebacker position coming out of this draft class, you had guys like Peyton Turner, Greg Rousseau, Jason Owe, and the Miami Dolphins choose to make Jalen Phillips their selection earlier than a lot of that group. And you're seeing he's coming along as the season goes. I think Greg Rousseau got a lot of press early, and Rousseau's kind of flat. He's plateaued a bit. And some of that's the level of competition. Some of that's just how he's being used. You see a player like Peyton Turner, who's been hurt most of the year. Owe had a hot start, and he gets some sacks. He's also been, he has a lot of coverage busts. He's not, he's an outside linebacker who doesn't really have a ton of, like right now he's a pure pass rusher. He doesn't bring a ton anywhere else on the field for the Ravens. For Phillips, in this game specifically, in what might be his most complete game as a pro, what did you see from him?
Well, he's just a freakish athlete, and I thought his best game was against the Ravens when they weren't really asking him to get after the quarterback. They were asking him to contain the quarterback, and he was following a game plan to a T. In this one, they were asking him to get after the quarterback, and he got a sack. He got an important sack. It was on third down, too, so it got him off the field when the game was tied. But if you watch Jalen Phillips, he's just a developing player. He's getting better. He's understanding what he has to do, and his snap counts are going up every single week. As the defense is getting better, he's playing more. So that should say something as well. I think he's developing into exactly what we expected him to be. A lot of draft nicks had him as the number one rated defensive end coming out in the draft. We took him as such. Then we tried to turn him into a stand-up linebacker, and that didn't work for preseason and the first two games of the season. So we decided, you know what, we're just going to rush him off of end, which is what he does best. And voila, he's kind of taken off. So I'm very happy with his development. I think he's going to be a pretty nice player for us down the road. And season's not over yet. He could end up with a pretty nice little sack total. He's at 4 right now. He might even get, if he gets another 4, he gets 8. He gets another 4 in the next 6 games. That's pretty good, I think, for a rookie season.
Yeah, for a rookie, I don't know anybody who would scoff at that. So you guys handle your business against the Jets. You guys take the lead in your career, you know, the series. It's now 56-55-1 in favor of the Dolphins. Next week, you guys go up against Carolina, and against the spread, we were talking about this before we started recording, it's a pick 'em. It's essentially a pick 'em. Some places have a -1. Some places just have the game as a pick 'em. I don't know if it's hard to beat the spread. Do you agree with the fact that this game should be a pick 'em, or do you think that one team should be favored?
I think Miami should be favored just for the mere fact that they're at home. That's it. That's pretty much all. That's what it is. Carolina is a very good team. If you look a little bit deeper than their 5-6 record, they have a very good running back. They have a lot of good skill players. They have a very good defense with a good pass rush and a good secondary. Their problem is their quarterback play. Cam Newton is just not good. He's not going to be good. He's not going to be good and ever again. So that's their issue. If they could kind of control what they do with him, they should be a pretty good football team going forward, and they should win a few more games. So pick them, I guess, is right. And this is what gives a lot of Dolphin fans, well, not a lot, because most of them are really pessimistic maniacs. But most of the optimistic Dolphin fans are looking at the schedule going forward, and they're saying, look, you know, this game's pick 'em. Then they're favored against the Giants, favored against the Jets. I'm no math major, but that puts them at 7-7 and smack dab in the middle of the playoff chase, playing against the Saints team that's falling apart, playing against their old quarterback in Tannehill, and then playing against the Patriots at home, where they've beaten the Patriots the last 4 times. So, yeah, you can't help but be optimistic. But I think this line is right.
Sir, a pleasure as always. Where can people find your work, and what do you guys have coming up over this week on 3 Yards Per Carry?
Well, this week, due to Thanksgiving, we only have one show. We'll be dropping that tonight, where we'll talk about this game and we'll preview the Carolina Panthers. You can check out all our work on Twitter at 3 Yards Per Carry. You want to follow me? It's Alf_Arteaga. And you want to get our podcast, you can get it anywhere you get your podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, etc.
The Buffalo Bills, we lost 41-15. We're in second place in the AFC East, and we're on the fringe of the playoffs. And it's a little bit frustrating, Chris, when you look at the lay of the land and all the teams that are around us. We have a fairly difficult schedule the rest of the way. I mean, we have a couple teams that Tampa Bay, New Orleans. We have some teams up ahead of us that nobody else has to contend with that have higher winning percentages than most of what's on left on their roster. We lack tiebreakers to Indy, Pittsburgh, and Tennessee. And just one win separates us from a wild card pool that consists of Cleveland and their physical running attack, Pittsburgh and a defense that will keep them in games until the fourth quarter, which we saw last night on Sunday Night Football, the Raiders and whatever the fuck they are this season. The reality is the Bills, if they continue to play the way that they have, Chris, if they aren't moved on from this, if they don't grow from this experience and get back to being the team that we thought they could be, are we not the weakest among all of the contenders?
No. I think they're all equally weak.
It's a crowded field, and it's chaos, and you don't know what could happen. It didn't have to be this way. We erred on the side of keeping the band together. And it turns out the Bills made a mistake in that regard, because a lot of the guys that we've kept have regressed really poorly from last season to this season. Okay, let's start with Cody Ford. Cody Ford, we've talked about it in our Rock Pile Report podcast. He's in the basement for most blocking, both in passing and run blocking metrics. He's in the basement of the NFL. There are 32 other teams who sometimes have three other players who are better than Cody Ford. That's depressing to know that he's our key backup.
I know. Where's Skursky when you need him?
Ryan Bates is somehow on the roster? Why? What has he done? Why is he even here?
Did he play on Sunday?
No! I guess this is it. Like, they traded for this kid, and they keep him around in the sake of, like, under the auspices of development, quote-unquote. I'm sorry. What, you're the backup center and a tackle? Ooh. So, you're going to protect... Well, what are you protecting? You're protecting a guy who's your backup tackle, backup center, but he's your backup center, and you don't trust him to ever actually see the football field. Then why are you here? Vernon Butler, we talked about it during this week's Rock Pile Report. Big for no reason. Can't win 1v1 at all. He has a hugging contest every time the ball snapped, even though he's one of the biggest guys in the field. He's literally stealing game checks from the Buffalo Bills at this point. It's depressing and frustrating, and just, I don't understand how this team has gotten to a point. Ike Bakker, he's not terrible, but he's not a part of a Super Bowl team. If you put him on most NFL teams, Ike Bakker is usually inactive. It's a travesty that he's been starting for us. We've reached a point where this team has been built on a lot of fault lines, and it's coming to fruition, all of it. Now, we're here in the division fighting for our lives, because if we don't win the division, I'd argue as a wild card, I know everyone keeps trying to make themselves feel better. Oh, Tampa Bay last year, they were a wild card, and they won the Super Bowl. Yeah, but this is a different offensive line. This is a different Bills team. We're not them. We don't have the rushing presence they have.
See, I would hate going up against a team that has a dominant rushing performance. If Derrick Henry comes back and we got to see Tennessee again, that's not that great of a matchup for us, kind of like how it was on Sunday.
Yeah, this is it. There's other teams that have proven that they can be more physical than we are. That's where this lives and dies. We're a finesse team. We're built around these auspices of, well, we can trickeration and spacing, and we can our guys can get separation, and our superstar quarterback is just going to be able to throw our way to victory every single week. Aaron Rodgers just lost this week. He threw four touchdown passes. It didn't matter. They still lost. Why? Because your team played with no balls. This team has to find its balls, or we are going to collapse. Chris, it's time to sack up.
I think they can do it. I got faith.
I'm not saying they can't. What I'm saying is that it's highly improbable that we change all of these negative trends. I feel like physical play in the trenches is something that you can't just turn on like a light switch. This is going to be a symptom of who we are for the rest of the season. And in that way, it's really problematic and it's kind of depressing. As well, especially when you look at who's sitting on top of the division now. And so then that brings us to the crown jewel of tonight's conversation. The first time that the Buffalo Bills in the existence of the AFC's Roundup podcast have not been in the top spot. It's occupied by the Patriots, and here to talk to us about just the beatdown they put on the Falcons this week is Christian Simonelli. How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, thanks, gentlemen. I'd ask how you are, but I think I already know.
Yeah, it hasn't been well over here. It hasn't gone well this week. Everything's terrible. Everything sucks. Let's talk a little bit about this win. First of all, I'm not going to lie. My wife thinks I'm now smarter than I am, because when you inevitably chased Matt Ryan from the game and they put in Josh Rosen, my wife was coming home from a hockey game and she's trying to make small talk with me, and she goes, oh, isn't that the guy you wanted the Bills to draft over Josh Allen? I was like, thanks, honey. Thanks for rubbing that in. She goes, well, how's he doing? Does he look good? And I go, no, he's made a couple safe passes, so he's about to throw an interception. She goes, you can't know that. And on the very next play, he throws a pick six. So she now thinks that I'm a genius when it comes to the game of football. But it's literally just, that's how bad the Falcons are. I mean, when it came to this game, were you ever concerned that you guys wouldn't railroad them?
No, we were just more concerned on a short week, just wanted to get out of there without any injuries. I mean, I think pretty much everybody felt we were going to win the game because Atlanta was so bad. And when you took a deeper look into their stats, you know, they were pretty much ranked last in almost every category, or 31st. So felt pretty good about the win, about going in there to win. And we just figured, okay, it's a short week. Let's get out of here with no injuries. And, it just turned into a four-turnover beatdown, basically.
Well, so Matt Ryan, 158, no touchdowns, four picks. He's screaming at his teammates on the sideline, which I was like, he's washed. He's done. Just get him out of there. 165 total yards allowed by the defense, which is crazy, which means you guys gave up almost nothing on the ground and also suppressed their passing game. You guys, this defense, is that the type of performance that you come to? I guess it's just, is this what you were expecting from the defense at this point in the season?
It's what we were hoping for. I don't think anybody expected this. I don't think anybody expected, in 2 weeks to give up a total of 7 points. I will say this, that this year it seems any offense that the Patriots go up against, if that offense can just do one thing, like if they can either just run or they can just throw, the Patriots do a pretty good job of shutting that down and say, okay, beat us left-handed. And teams can't. It's the more balanced teams, like Dallas, for example, like the Saints, for example, that will give them a hard time so far this year.
So when I look at this, obviously you guys thumped these guys. You now hold the top spot in the AFC East. One of the biggest storylines to come out of this game that I have to pick your brain about as a fan, the media love affair with Mac Jones has reached biblical proportions. And at this point, I genuinely can't stomach a whole lot more of it. When you consider the makeup of the Patriots' opponents and the fact that Jones is still playing like a system quarterback rather than a standalone talent or playmaker, yet everybody wants to crown him as the next greatest thing to happen to football. I mean, look at this, 84% completion percentage. Now, that's impressive. just 204 yards and only three passes of more than 15 or more air yards. He's 1 for 3 with a pick on those. So what do you think as a fan, not as an analyst, not as somebody who's trying to pump up their team, just as a fan of this, do you feel like some of the praise that's being heaped on Mac Jones is a little bit undeserved?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. It's the new flashy thing everybody's fallen in love with. Fact of the matter is he really hasn't been asked to throw the ball downfield. He's made a couple of nice throws downfield in a couple of games, most notably the Cleveland game. But other than that, he's really just, you know, been in charge with making sure that he's, you know, just don't crash the Ferrari, kid. We gave you the keys to the Ferrari. Don't crash the Ferrari. And he's really been relying on the running game, which now seems like it's spearheaded by a two-headed attack of Harris and Stevenson. So he's got that going for him. He did come back in the Charger game. He did lead the team down and come out with a victory there. But yeah, I mean, it's a little bit, okay, let's, you know, take it easy here. You know, the kid hasn't really met any resistance yet. And like I said, he hasn't been asked to bring a team back, to bring the team back from like 14 or 17 points down and win a game.
What about the reception in Foxborough? This better than Brady talk. Is a lot of that sour grapes? Is it just knee jerk? Like what? How could people think that a guy who dominated a division for 20 years, like he wasn't better than this kid who's done it for 10 games?
Yeah, those are the real psychos. Like those are the people that like are really bitter, and they either hold a grudge for Brady because he quote left, or they're just so infatuated with Bill that they can't see the forest through the trees, and they just want to crown Bill. Yeah, see, he knew he picked the next one, and it's the genius of Bill Belichick. It's more about it being the genius of Bill Belichick than it is actually Mac Jones being good, if that makes any sense.
No, that absolutely makes sense. And I guess that's where all of this kind of lies, because now it's the Buffalo Bills and you guys jockeying for first place, which everyone who we've talked to kind of said, hey, listen, this Patriots team will be better than they were last year. But nobody saw you guys owning the division lead at any point. Everyone thought that this would run through Buffalo. So now with this in question, how do you think your team right now stacks up against the Buffalo Bills playing the way they're playing?
I think pretty good. You know, that, and again, you know, the NFL is a week-to-week, you know, league, right? I mean, you look like a hero one week and you look like a zero the next week. Going off of yesterday, watching your game against the Colts, it was a real eye-opener. You don't mind me saying, you guys got pushed around, you know? And to go up against a team like the Patriots, who loves to push people around. They love to push people around. They, like I mentioned, they got this two-headed attack right now with Harris and Stevenson that looks really good. Provided they can stay healthy, they got a real nice foundation there to be in a lot of games. I don't think they're going to win a lot of high-scoring games, but they're going to be in games and they're going to be competitive. And, you know, obviously, like I said, if Mac finds himself down 14 points, 21 points, 17 points, whatever it is, I think that's going to be very difficult for a team like this to come back. But I tell you one thing, I feel a lot better now than I did 4 weeks ago when they were 2-4.
Well, of course. No, there's no way you couldn't. So obviously, the better than Brady talk, you don't buy that because Brady was your guy for 2 decades, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this kid has so far to go to even be in the conversation with Brady. It's not even funny. And the kind of thing that pisses me off, too, is the people that talk about the season being very comparable to the 2001 team that Brady was on in his second year, and ultimately they beat the greatest show on turf. Totally different team. While it is relying on the defense much like that team was, this is a totally different league. It's a totally different NFL, you know, some 22 years later. So I think those comparisons, again, you know, people just love to, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is really with everything, they love to go back and compare things like that. I just don't see it. You know, Mac is going to be his own player. How good that's going to be, I don't know. Is he going to be Tom Brady? No one's ever going to be Tom Brady. Is he going to be a Kirk Cousins? Is he going to be a Matt Ryan type? Who knows? We'll see. You know, is he going to be better than that? I don't know. Right now, though, the kid's got a pretty good head on the shoulders. Doesn't really seem to get rattled that much. But you know, talk to me in 10 years, and then maybe if he's still in the league and has had a quarter of the success Brady's had, then we could have a conversation. But yeah, he'll never, not in my eyes, he's got a long, long way to go.
See, and Chris, that's why I like talking to Christian about stuff like this, because this is what we want to hear from an irrational fan perspective.
You didn't spit out trash like Ryan Clark.
Ryan Clark goes, oh, he's the best. He's got all these stats.
Awful take. Yeah, awful take. It was terrible.
Yeah, see, exactly. And that's my point, I guess. It's just a little bit of overkill from the media, because they're always looking for the bigger, better deal. They're always looking for the next best thing. So they've moved on from hyping Josh Allen to going out and talking about how Mac Jones is the thing. He's going to be the greatest thing that ever moved since Brady. It's going to be fine. I promise you, if you put the two of them in a room together, Tom Brady knows more about football than Mac Jones. Like, he's forgotten more than Mac Jones knows right now. That's...
Oh, yeah.
But Tom Brady's a petty son of a bitch. He doesn't forget anything. He remembers all of it, and it's why he's one of the best. It's I've grown to like him now that he's left your team, and I kind of wish I had that appreciation for him when he was here, because he has a personality, and he's a petty son of a bitch, and that's who we are. That's who Chris and I are. If anything, we're our kindred spirits in just being miserable, going, hey, I hate this team. I'm going to pile it on him. Why? Because I can. Because I'm petty.
He's human. Hey, he's human, you know. I'm getting a lot of that from different fan bases, too. How they, oh, gee, you know, I didn't know he kind of had a sense of humor, and I know he was that type of guy. You know, you were just looking through the lens of hate. You know, but now you're looking through just the lens of an NFL player, and you see him differently. So I get that.
No, it's interesting that now you guys have to go through this all again with another quarterback that everyone's trying to anoint as the next best thing, and it's way too early to be making that conversation. But luckily for you guys, you have two matchups against Buffalo coming up. where you can prove that all of this bluster might actually have some merit. So next week against the spread, it's you guys against the Tennessee Titans. You guys are 5.5-point favorites against the Tennessee Titans. Do you agree or disagree with that spread?
I actually disagree with that spread. And I don't disagree. Obviously, you could say, gee, how could you say that? Look at what happened yesterday in Houston beat Tennessee. Two words, Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel will have his team ready for this game. Mike Vrabel has come into New England and won a playoff game when Brady was the quarterback. That was Brady's last game as a Patriot. So just for the institutional knowledge and the coaching, this is going to be an absolute slugfest. And I think that's a high line.
Chris, that's interesting. He's got a point. Certain coaches, certain players, they get up for certain games. Yeah, this might be their Waterloo.
You would think Vrabel's going to come ready to coach against.
Well, especially because they just lost against Houston. They feel like their season might slip away if they lose too many. You lose two more, you're down here with the Bills. You don't want to be where we are. Man, it's crazy. There's so much on the line. This Sunday is going to be so nice to just sit back and watch football without having to stress about what the Bills are going to do, because they can't fuck my day up. They would have done it already earlier in the week. Simonelli, where can people find you on social media? Because you're a great follower and you're a great time to talk to.
You can find me at Chris with the TIAN, and give me a follow on Twitter. I'll give you a follow back. I love going back and forth with other fan bases. And particularly at a game like yesterday, where you see everybody whose team is losing just absolutely lose their mind and the world is just collapsing all around them. So, you know, I've definitely been a lot more sensitive to that over the years, you know, particularly last year when we sucked. So I can feel your pain a little bit. So let's have a good time on Twitter.
Scott Mason, Alf Arteaga, Christian Simonelli, some of the best. They're like the Truth Commission. In the WWF.
Please tell me that wasn't a real thing.
It was a real thing.
The Truth Commission?
Yeah, 97.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
With the Jackal. I forget all of their names except the Jackal.
Yeah, they're all forgettable because none of them were good.
They weren't even around a whole year. So.
No, none of them were good.
Well, it was 97. That's when everybody had to have a stable. You had to, because the NWO was so hot. There has to be multiple stables everywhere. Truth Commission. That's who those guys remind me of.
Jesus Christ. Guys, it's going to be a wild week in the NFL because it's going to dictate where the Bills fall amongst not just the AFC, but amongst our own division. They have a... The Patriots have to play a competitive team for the first time in a while, a team with a winning record. The Bills have to find a way to win. If we don't pull it off, it'll stay status quo, and that's even more problematic for our long-term chances at making the playoffs or winning the division title. Like, Chris, a loss here by the Bills and a win by the Patriots, how far out of touch does that put the division title?
It's still within reach. The two games that we got in December against the Patriots are going to be huge.
Huge.
Like Billy Fasillo, he's going to be huge.
He's dead now.
Yeah, I know.
Well, in the spirit, hey, listen, we raise a glass to Billy Fasillo. This week is going to be huge. We got to get out of here, though. I'm Drew Gear. That's Chris Krueger. And this has been your AFC's Roundup.